Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
An epic weekend of music, but the controversy over Glastonbury performances continues to dominate headlines in the UK. Prime Minister Keir Starmer has condemned chants of death to the Israel Defence Forces during Bob Villain's performance as appalling hate speech, and he said the BBC has questions to answer. He also doubled down on previous comments about Belfast rapper's kneecap, who he said should not be given a platform. Well, let's get more on this. I'm joined by Mark Paul, London correspondent with the Irish Times. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Claire.
I see in the last few minutes now, Ofcom, the broadcasting regulatory body, saying that it's very concerned about this live stream of Bob Villain's performance. And they also say, as Keir Starmer has said, that the BBC has questions to answer. They're facing a pretty serious political backlash, the BBC, for broadcasting this.
That's right. I mean, everybody thought that the trouble out of Glastonbury would come from Kneecap's performance. But it turns out that it's come from the performance of the band or the hip-hop duo directly before them, Bob Villain. And its frontman, Bobby Villain, as you said, made those chants of death to the IDF and led the crowd at Glastonbury at Westhall stage in that chant. So it's now become very much a BBC impartiality story, and it should probably be seen in the context of other crises that have gripped the BBC over impartiality in the last number of months. I mean, Gary Lineker, and also there was a documentary on Gaza that was pulled after a 13-year-old narrator of that documentary was found to be the son of a Hamas official. So the BBC has become basically a lightning rod for the political pressure over this. And the question really for the BBC is, why didn't they pull the plug on this guy in the middle of his chants? And they left it up for 5 hours online afterwards. They streamed it live. And now they're getting it from all angles. I mean, the government has been out. Obviously, Keir Starmer has criticised them. Lisa Nandy, the Culture Secretary. There was another minister, Jackie Smith, who was out this morning to say that the BBC's response and its apology wasn't good enough. And you even have Chris Philp, who is the Home Secretary, who basically posed the question as to whether or not BBC executives should be prosecuted for this. So it's a huge political issue, and any time there's anything like this around the BBC. And particularly over this sort of issue, I mean, you know, they really worked themselves up in a lather over here.
And then the BBC made that decision not to live stream the kneecap performance, which was then given five stars for its musicality by The Guardian. And you had live streaming happening then by people in the audience, in particular this woman, Helen from Wales. I don't know if you've heard about her. She broadcast it live. Yeah. By the time it was over, she had 1.8 million interactions. So you'd question really whether those broadcasting bans have any relevance nowadays.
No, they haven't. And I mean, Keir Starmer was very strong in his comments beforehand that Glastonbury BBC shouldn't broadcast live Kneecap's performance, and he also said that Kneecap shouldn't perform at all, in fact. And you're right, Helen, this cafe owner from Wales who broadcast it live has become something of a kind of an anti-culture hero, I suppose, to a lot of Kneecap's fans. And it just goes to show, look, you can't, in the internet age, you can't really keep this stuff quiet. But the real question for BBC is, why didn't see the Bob Villain stuff coming? And Bob Villain is probably the only act in Britain that has been even more vociferous than Kneecap in its criticism of Israel and in the strength and the depth and the kind of ferocity of the comments made. So this is a big crisis now for Tim Davies, the Director General of BBC. You've already had members of the House of Lords and so on wondering whether or not he can hang on to his job in relation to this. So it's another massive crisis for the BBC. Kneecap, for once, I don't think are highest up on the naughty step here. The Avon and Somerset police have said that they are reviewing everything that was said on the Westhall stage on Saturday afternoon, which will bring in some of Kneecap's comments. I mean, for example, they led the crowd and they used the F word in relation to Keir Starmer and led the crowd in relation to that. But look, I mean, I've heard Labour MPs say similar things about Keir Starmer on the terrace of the House of Commons. So it's not, you know, and I don't really see any real legal jeopardy for Kneecap and what happened on Saturday. Mm-hmm. It could be different for Bobby Villain. It all comes down to whether or not it can be shown that he incited racial hatred, and that will be the question, from a legal perspective.
For NECAP, though, as a music event, it was a massive success, wasn't it? I mean, they had to even close off the area because it was becoming too packed on the day.
That's what NECAP are certainly the story of the event. 45 minutes beforehand, and they closed it off. The West Hulls. The field around the West Hall stage, I mean, holds what, 30,000 people, and so it was a huge gig. And NECAP, I suppose, have come to symbolise something in Britain. And it's when you live here, you kind of come to realise how different the debate is around Israel and Gaza and Britain compared to Ireland. And NECAP, I suppose, have given voice to something in popular culture in Britain, and that doesn't always get much voice in the political sphere. And so they've really come to symbolise something in Britain, and you know, they're getting a huge amount of attention over it, and I suppose there's a lot of novelty around NECAP as well, tricolour balaclavas and so on. So yeah, everybody thought NECAP would be the story of Glastonbury. It's turned out to be Bobby Villain. Now, you know, one day later, it's the BBC that's at the heart of this story, and now it's just a huge political issue.
Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder how much trouble the BBC is in over this. Clearly, Sky News, for lots of reasons, giving this an awful lot of coverage, running it as breaking news as we speak. But the BBC has said today that it regrets not pulling the live stream, and as you say, it was left up for 5 hours afterwards. So that does give rise to a lot of questions that are being asked in the other media organisations today, you know, and they have reason to ask those questions, because it was one thing to allow it to go out live on the live stream, but then not to pull it for 5 hours.
That's right. And I also heard questions raised this morning in a BBC radio show by a former director of Channel 4, who said, look, you know, they shouldn't be held to the same impartiality guidelines at BBC for something like a music gig as they are for news. But given the nature of some of the content that they knew would come from, or they should have known would come from somebody like Bobby Villain and also from NECAP, they should have had possibly a politics producer in the room at the time, who could have told him to hit the red button to pull the broadcast when it led into this. I mean, you know, chance of death to the IDF. I mean, that goes a lot further, I think, than anything NECAP has ever said. And I think a lot of people found it shocking. Whether or not it's illegal, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a legal expert, but I think a lot of people found it shocking. And it's something that, you know, has no political support in any sense. There is nobody from a political point of view really defending Bobby Villain's right to freedom of speech here. I mean, I think it's been rejected as odious across the spectrum. It's just a huge issue.
Right. Well, there's more to come on that, because as you say, the BBC will have to give a formal response. Ofcom are interested in it now as well, saying they have serious questions to answer. And the police are saying that they're considering whether to launch an investigation into the whole thing. Mark, thanks so much. Mark Paul there, London correspondent with the Irish Times. Well, let's find out what's happening in the Middle East this morning, because Israel has ordered Palestinians to evacuate from parts of northern Gaza ahead of increased military action. This comes amid calls from President Trump, US President Trump, for a ceasefire. He wants Israel to make the deal in Gaza and get the hostages back. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Nabi Boulos, who's Middle East Bureau Chief for the LA Times. And Nabi, thank you for being with us today. Donald Trump over the weekend was on social media saying that Benjamin Netanyahu was in the process of negotiating a deal with Hamas right in that moment. And he said a ceasefire deal might come as early as this week. What do you know about what's happening? Are talks underway? Have they resumed?
Well, so there have been some proposals on the table. So the proposal we've heard from U.S. Envoy Steve Witkoff is that now they want a 60-day ceasefire, and there would be the release of 10 living hostages and 18 deceased hostages in exchange for Palestinian detainees. Now, the fact of the matter is, I mean, an idea in the 60-day pause that you would then have negotiations for a comprehensive ceasefire agreement that would end the war. But the fact is, this doesn't feel all that different from what we had before, right? I mean, there has been no material change in terms of the conditions, I have to say. And also, it should be said that the deal wouldn't be all that different from what has been proposed earlier, which Israel also rejected. I mean, the fact is, the sticking point is whether this will lead to a permanent end to the war or not. And that's something that neither side appears to be willing to, well, I guess, compromise on. And so therefore, I mean, there might be talks, but the chance of them succeeding without some kind of extra pressure from the Americans, I think, is quite difficult.
And what do you think Benjamin Netanyahu meant when he said yesterday that many opportunities have opened up following Israel's military operations in Iran? Does he feel that gives him the upper hand in dealing with Hamas?
I mean, I think it's possible that politically he feels more secure. That certainly seems to be the case when it comes to the various, I suppose, trials against him. And of course, I mean, the rally around the flag moment that happened after the war with Iran has really been quite helpful to him as a boost. At the same time, in terms of actually material changes for the conflict itself, I mean, the fact is Iran has not been able to help Hamas in recent months anyway, obviously. And at the same time, you know, it's worth adding that Hamas has not really shifted its position in any substantive way right over the last few months. The fact is it has been calling for a ceasefire and is willing to, I suppose, negotiate, you know, like a hostage release. But at the same time, it wants a comprehensive end to the war. Since that hasn't changed, it doesn't really care. It's just Netanyahu's, I guess, prospects. It's possible that now he does feel more secure and is able to perhaps sway the more extreme elements in his government to a deal that would be, I suppose, less to their liking. But in terms of any real change, I'm actually quite unsure as to why he said that, because there has been no change in terms of pressure.
Now, we look at what's happened overnight, and we have the Civil Defence Agency in Gaza saying that 23 people were killed, Nabi. This as a result of Israeli airstrikes, they say, and also gunfire. And then we have that warning that I mentioned at the beginning, evacuation orders for parts of Gaza. Can you bring us up to date with the most recent events?
Well, so actually, I mean, the death toll has now increased up to 48 from the civil defense numbers that I've seen. And in terms of the evacuation orders, yes, you're right. I mean, today the spokesman for the Israeli military actually said that they have to evacuate 18 areas around Gaza City and in Gaza City. And of course, this has been accompanied by about 50 strikes on various parts of Gaza since the morning. So obviously, this is a very, very intense situation. But we are talking about increasingly large blocks of areas that are being called upon to evacuate. And as you can imagine, this is a supremely difficult situation for residents there. I mean, we're not talking about one evacuation order. We're talking about many, many, many throughout the last few months. And each time we're talking about a mass movement of people. And oftentimes they can't take with them any sort of tents. They can't take with them any kind of infrastructure. And so they're setting up anew every time, it seems. It actually is really quite difficult.
And the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, so controversial since it began its operations, but the United States has decided to give it $30 million now worth of funding. It has been widely condemned by the UN agencies and every other aid organization, including Doctors Without Borders, because of the killing that has happened around those drop-off points. But it is clearly continuing in what it sees as its mission to replace the work of the UN.
Well, the fact is that the entire premise of this GHF situation is quite strange, right? I mean, just in terms of comparisons, right? If we're talking about the UN and partner humanitarian organizations that were operating in the Gaza Strip, they were actually, distributing food to about 400 different points right across the entire strip. And at the same time, they were actually using registries. So they would register people who were in need, and they would send them, messages or some kind of SMS to their phone telling them that their aid package was ready and that they could pick it up from a nearby point. Now, contrast that with what the GHF is doing. It's basically activating four different areas that are all in the south of the strip. At the same time, not all of them are on at the same time. They're on at different times. And then, and here's the clincher, I suppose, is that people are allowed to gather about a mile away from the actual distribution point. And then they're simply, they're allowed to proceed. They have to run, really sprint right across that area, right, with the Israeli army nearby. And if they dare to go, across the limits or across some sort of, like this proscribed area, then they're shot at, as we've seen many, many times. And then at the same time, there's actually no personalized distribution. People are simply just thrown at this bunch of boxes and told to have at it. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, this is extremely chaotic when you have people who are starving. And the results speak for themselves. We are talking about actually people dying every day. And in fact, right now, the death toll has increased to about 583 people killed and more than 4,000 wounded. And this is just from aid seekers, according to the Gaza Ministry of Health.
Yeah. And Doctors Without Borders, as I mentioned, have criticised this, and they have said it is slaughter masquerading as humanitarian aid. Nabi, thank you for your time once again. Nabi Boulos there, who's Middle East Bureau Chief with the LA Times.